You're listening to the Musical Ecologies Radio Hour. I'm your host, Dan Joseph, and once a month we bring you a mix of conversations and musical selections by artists featured on the Musical Ecology series in Park Slope, Brooklyn. I invite you to visit our website for more information on our artists and upcoming events at musicalecologies.net. For tonight's program, we'll revisit our event on Thursday, March 10th, with San Francisco-based saxophonist John Engel. Known for his unique tone and virtuosic command of extended techniques, Engel is a founding member of the noted Bay Area New Music Ensemble known as SF Sound Group. In our conversation which began the evening, we talked about his background and influences, and how he found his way from his native Tennessee to California. Later, Engel gave a powerful extended solo performance that showcased his many innovative techniques and sounds. But we'll begin tonight's broadcast with my conversation with saxophonist John Engel at the Old Stone House in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
So John, so I guess maybe a good place to start, maybe you can tell, I'm not even sure I know the answer to this, so I would like to know maybe how you came to be a saxophonist. Where did that begin?
These people want to hear this? This is. You know, I grew up in a small town in Tennessee, Dan, which you know. Now, I might say this is a little awkward for me because Dan Joseph and I have been collaborators and friends for many years. So it's one of my oldest collaborators, not in age, but in time of collaborating. And
so that is true.
This is going to be fun. I'll try not to throw any curveballs, man, but you never know.
Well, I just...
But how did I come to play the saxophone? I grew up in a very small town in Tennessee, Dyer, Tennessee. I like to tell people it's spelled D-Y-E-R, but D-I-R-E works. It was a very small place with not a lot going on, mostly a little farming community. My dad had a corner drugstore. Mostly the town has disappeared because of the invention of Walmarts, and like much of the middle of America, it's kind of a ghost town now. But back in the day, when I went to school, there was a thing called public music education. Public schools had music education. So, in the fifth grade, I could be in the band. There weren't private lessons or orchestras, and I told my dad and mom I wanted to play an instrument. They said, what? I said, the drums, immediately. And then my father's like, I think you want to play the saxophone. And I was like, sure, Dad. Boy, that sounds great. So,
if only you knew.
If only I'd known, you know, I could have been a drummer. Darn. But I don't think they wanted to hear me practice the drums. Well, but I wanted to please my father. We looked it up in a World Book Encyclopedia because I wasn't exactly sure what one looked at. And that is what one looks like right there. It's a saxophone.
Right, and this was, you said this was in around fifth grade when this happened?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And had you played other instruments or had any musical encounters before
that? I'd taken some piano lessons that I didn't really enjoy. I think my piano teacher passed away and I didn't like the other teacher.
Right.
So, yeah. So I wasn't there weren't a lot of musical opportunities in Dyer, Tennessee besides band.
Right.
Go figure.
So in school, this was what, a concert band kind of context?
Yeah, and marching around with big funny things on your head, which I didn't really enjoy, but I enjoyed the music aspect.
Right.
Yeah.
So you took right to it, it sounds like.
Pretty much, you know.
And
I didn't become very serious about it to my high school and teenage years.
Right.
And I realized it was something to do.
Right. You know? So eventually then, fast forwarding a little bit, you went to school for music primarily.
Correct.
Or college, that is. I'm speaking post high school. Mm-hmm. So at that point, your saxophone direction, I mean, from what I know of you, you were sort of oriented towards a classical training, a classical saxophone.
Well, because there was no jazz where I grew up, and that's really a shame. I came to it very late. At least relatively late.
You mean
in life.
You came to
saxophone. To understand? No, I didn't grow up in New York, where there was great music all the time. There weren't radio stations. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the pre-internet. It's maybe hard to believe, but I didn't hear any jazz. So I went to school as raw could be. I had great facility for a young high school player, but no real ideas about what music right. was, and you know, when I got quickly corrupted by some composers and avant-garde performers of new music, mm-hmm. and for me, it was just the world was wide open. I'd gone to church with, and I'm not a believer, but I'd gone to church with my family who were, and I heard out of tune a cappella church music. Very out of tune. They thought pianos were
microtonal.
Well, unintentionally microtonal music and polytonal. So that was really that, and Mark and Band were my first two influences. That may that you have the opportunity to leave now, but but yes. Yeah, so I had not heard jazz, and the reason you know, and I was in somehow I auditioned and got into the A jazz band at Memphis State, and these guys were like, who is this hick? He has a weird sound. He can't swing. He sucks. You know, and I'm like, this guy. And I felt that because there were these older, great players, and, you know, I was just a hick who had never heard jazz. But the dorky composers had they're like, well, we can take this young fella and mold him the way into our... the ways that we want. So
this is
get them while they're young. Teach them what you want them to know. Is an old saying.
So then this was sort of more of a contemporary music milieu.
A very square academic music
composition. So who were some of the what was some of the repertoire that you were playing?
Dorky saxophone music. There were the composers there. There's a guy named John Bauer and a guy named Don Freund who went on to success at the University of Indiana. There were a couple of composers. There was a guy named John Elmquist and a guy named Kevin Gray, who were my colleagues that I performed with, and mm-hmm. we did a lot of concerts together. And I played a lot of academic Midwestern, even though this is the South. I don't know if there are musicians out there. There's kind of this square academic Midwestern new music that is very prominent in the institutions of the whole country, even with the exception of New York, where actual music goes on outside of that.
So, I think there's a few other places.
There's a few other, but I'm just saying that.
But
there is a scene
your
for
point
this
is
kind
well
of
taken.
Yes.
So sort of a more academic, like, as you say, just kind of a dry academic contemporary classical idiom circa 1980 something is what we're talking
you're
about.
You're nailing it.
So I have a kind of an idea what that sounded like.
Pretty square.
Well, good, but nonetheless you honed your chops if nothing else, and you expanded your horizons for sure.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the 80s, and then going forward, so from that
Let me just say, from that, a few important things happened.
Absolutely.
I discovered, I heard John Coltrane and A Love Supreme, and I'm like, whoa, around the same time I probably discovered marijuana, so that really went together really well for me. And then I heard Anthony Braxton, I'm like, well, there's a guy who might be playing jazz, unless,
maybe.
From my perspective, it was jazz, but obviously, from jazz musicians, perhaps not. But I heard that, and I heard the alt energy music of the 60s. My mind was blown, and I started playing in bands and
this is
improvising.
Still while you're living in Memphis.
That's right. And I had a very profound experience in the middle of my graduate school, and I'd also studied with a very famous classical saxophonist named Don Senta, who teaches at the University of Michigan. And I worked at the Interlochen at the camp up there. I was a dishwasher, and he liked it that I was willing to go up there and wash dishes for all these rich kids. And he gave me free lessons for a couple of years. And I'd reached a point where I'm like, I'm just going to move to New York. I'm going to drop out of school. School's for squares. I'm not square. I'm going to play weird music and go. And I was trying to figure out what to do, and I went to a folk music festival in Memphis where a fife player named Otha Turner, who's now passed, but he got recorded, documented later in his life, and Otha made a fife for me. I paid him $20, and he took a piece of river cane, and he He cut it to fit my fingers, right? So he didn't have a concept of scale or temperament. It wasn't equal, it was to fit your hand, right? But then he told me in a very serious moment, he said, you know, and this guy was a sharecropper, right? Who grew up in a really different era. And he said, each of one of my fives, it has its own tune. Mm-hmm. And your job is to figure out its tune. It's not to play your tune, it's to play its tune.
Right.
And that was a pretty profound moment for me at the time. And I was, you know, I'm sure I was stoned. I'm like, whoa.
Right.
And that really stuck with me. And, you know, consequently, I had a weird opportunity to move to Asia where I taught saxophone in Taiwan, and I began improvising. I felt as a new music guy in academia, I was kind of like a typewriter who like executed others' ideas, and I wanted my own ideas. So that led to the next 20 years of figuring it out.
So just let me rewind that. So a fife, just so I understand, I mean, this is like a
piece of river cane,
so like a
bamboo,
trumpet-like.
It's a flute-like.
A flute, okay.
Yeah, so it's a, if, I don't know, if you, fife and drum, if you guys are interested and have the intranet, you can look up fife and drum bands, and it's a pre-blues tradition from the hill country, typically from the hills of northern Mississippi, which is near Memphis, where I was going to college. And they play military drums, you know, like concert band drums,
right,
or military drums. And one guy plays the fife. And the great thing about it, for it being a field music, is that you can hear it from miles away.
Right.
And it's beautiful, beautiful music. It's largely one chord vamp, not even one chord, because as Otha said, you know, each fife he made was different. But it largely was, you know, it's a pre-blues form that is still practiced in some small places like Senatobia, Mississippi.
So this is like a folk
correct
culture, or
you got it?
Because I think of it as, you know, fife and drum corps, like some kind of military or
yeah. This is African American pre-blues tradition that later developed. If you hear hill country blues from the same region, it also is like a one. They don't go to four and five very much. It's like a one chord, very trance-like, so it takes that African rhythmic tradition and squares it off into 4-4, but then you get this very free fife playing over the top. Mm-hmm. And it's quite beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that was, that at least philosophically was very important for me.
So you just zipped right over, right from Memphis to Taiwan, is that right?
Yep.
And what was that like? So you spent, what, a year,
two years teaching
Taiwan?
Mostly students who wanted to learn the dorky classical music that I had left behind.
And so what kind of musical encounters, you know, in Asia did you have there? How did that inform your musical thinking?
Well, mainly I practiced a lot, which is great. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a day job. Working in restaurants like I had done in Memphis. So I practiced a lot, I taught a lot, I studied Qigong with a guy who taught mostly classical musicians, but was a real free thinker and was interested in, I was already, I'd been at the Interlock and I'd heard a throat singer, so I was already interested in using my body and different ways to make sounds.
Mm-hmm,
and pretty much I became a sound-oriented musician and interested in that. And the Qigong was influential. I did some new music work, and I played in orchestras, and I played in some cheesy bands that I hope could, recordings of which never see the light of day. I covered some music that I was really grateful that I didn't know anyone during that time. But I was young. Yeah, you do play gigs.
Well, that sounds great. So, yeah, I mean, a whole other cultural experience.
Yes, as a small town boy from Tennessee, it was very eye-opening.
So from there, then, back to America, but this time on the West Coast, where you've been, I guess, ever since.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So you
I had visa problems, so I flew back to get a new passport.
visa problems in Taiwan. Remaining
in Taiwan. That's right.
I see.
And I flew back to get a new passport, and I was staying in Bonny Doon outside of Santa Cruz, where I heard about this great jazz pianist named Graham Khanna, but I didn't meet him at the time, but I heard about him. But believe that or not, believe it, guy at some place he used to play at told me about you. Restaurant downtown Santa Cruz, you had a weekly for a while there. We'll talk about it. Anyway, so I wound up there. I met some people from Mills College. I knew about Mills because I'd known some of the Kronos String Quartet people from Memphis, the cellist, the former cellist Jean-Jean Renaud from Memphis. So I went to visit Mills, ran into a colleague of mine, played on his thesis concert, was able to finagle some kind of scholarship, and enrolled in the master's program there.
So that was kind of a spontaneous decision.
It was,
having to do with you having to leave Taiwan.
That's right.
And next thing you know, you're at Mills College, and you've become somewhat of a permanent resident, I would say, of the Bay Area at this point, wouldn't we say? Right. It seems to have worked well for you, right?
So it has. I always assumed that I would move to New York or Berlin or some new music supporting place, but I love the natural world, and you know, my baby lives there, and we swim in the bay every day almost, and so that, you know.
And then there's also,
you know, the rest is history.
All right. Well, there's also some music going on there, right?
That's right.
So among other things, we know you're working as a member of SF Sound, which is a fairly prominent contemporary music group in San Francisco. So how long has SF Sound been active, roughly?
Well, the founder, Matt Ingles, no relation to me, different spelling.
Different name, in fact.
Different name, different spelling.
Though they are often confused, yes. That's true.
I was the first member. He was the founder when I was at Mills. That would have been 1999, I believe. So we've been together about 17 years as an ensemble.
Right. 17 years.
Uh-huh. Wow. There's some different dates if you talk to others, you know.
But in that ballpark.
The Johnny Come Lately's want to, you know, say that it's 15 or 16. I was the first member, so I know.
So, but SF Sound is an interesting group in that you know, it sort of fuses together a lot of different threads or different musical worlds that aren't typically. Yeah.
Not here, you know.
Well, I think.
Ghetto-wise, here in New York, you can't do everything.
Wait a minute! I thought this is where all the music was at.
Okay, it is all the music. I'm joking, but there you can be an improviser, a new music. You can be downtown and uptown at the same time, but here there's a more of a divide, I find.
Right.
Just to throw that out there.
Well, that may be. Well, my take, though, really with respect to SF Sound is that the group that you're a part of is unique, whatever the context, whether it's, you know, wherever it would happen to exist, it has, a unique take insofar as it's bringing together a lot of improvisation, a lot of contemporary music, but also
modernist
stuff. So it's an interesting
old-fashioned
fusion.
Stuff, yeah.
Well, anyway, it's certainly an interesting project that you've been involved with. And, so what is happening presently?
We're
a regular concert series.
We have a concert series and a salon series, and we struggle to find rehearsal time like everybody else. And we do, you know, the group that I'm in is involved. I feel like I should speak to the three people I don't know here, but anyway. The group I'm in is involved. We are all composers. It's a performers collective, and we all improvise and we all compose to greater or lesser extents and also interpret new music. So we're playing, and our aesthetic is quite in some ways old-fashioned. We're interested in the thorny music that was a product of high modernism, Berio, Stockhausen, Ligeti, Xenakis, these kind of composers. So it's very, seems like in New York, of course, there's all kinds of fads coming and going. We're not very postmodern. We don't play music that sounds like rock and roll. classical music, and that seems to me that's a big scene out here, like this kind of the bang on the can.
That's one aspect.
That's one. But what we're doing is more, not that those are, that's great music, but what we do is kind of unapologetically gestural and sound-based, I guess, textural, gestural, sound-based, not very harmonic, typically. Maybe I'm the most harmonic of the composers there, but...
Harmonical, or you mean tonal? Is that
yes, right? That's what I meant, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a
better
it's
word.
It's more of an atonal idiom, a lot mm-hmm. of modernist stuff, as you, but yeah, so it's...
So we improvise, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of collaboration with electronics.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's all kind of brought together in one kind of, slightly hard to define collective.
Right. And recently, the group has recently put out its first.
That's right.
Is that right.
I have two commercial CDs available, Dan.
You
one
haven't.
With you from
that's true.
The year 2000, and one that just came out, although it was probably recorded for, it took us 4 or 5 years to make it. But we have SF Sound has a CD, right. So you can hear me on two CDs right. that I'm willing to be heard on.
Right, and the SF Sound group, you also contributed some compositions.
That's right. Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's another aspect of the group I think that is notable is that it's composer performers to a large extent.
That's right.
You do play classic pieces, be it Berio or Ligeti, as you say, but also much of your own compositions.
That's right. That yeah. does distinguish us from the other new music groups, right. at least there.
And this,
here, I think there's some similar groups.
Well, there are some similar groups, but they're not so similar. I don't think there's a group that's so much composer-performer that also plays all of this kind of modern.
Right.
Anyway,
it's the West, you know.
There's a spectrum.
Yeah.
But yes, it's a little bit different
not as
recipe,
codified,
I guess. So congratulations on that TV. I'm looking forward to hearing it. Seeing
you haven't, you haven't.
I haven't actually seen it.
I brought
yet,
you
but,
a copy.
Oh,
it's in
great.
My bag.
Great. We'll take a look at that.
I have
later.
No copies for sale. I forgot that. But you can buy it online.
Well, that's terrific. So tell us about what you're gonna play for us tonight.
Well, I'm gonna improvise mostly, and I'm gonna demonstrate some throat zinging techniques that I do through the horn, and then I'm going to play some saxophone improvisations. Some of them are, I like to call swirly-whirlies, where my fingers are just moving a lot, and it's kind of a trance-like activity.
Right.
And then other things are, I'm particularly interested in multiphonics and I'm interested in complex, non-traditional sounds that come out of the saxophone. The multiphonics I do with my voice, I started doing saxophone multiphonics before that. I'm using the saxophone, it's a tube, it's a cone. So I'm using its natural properties to make some sounds that I hope are appealing to you all.
Right, well you bring a lot of different techniques to the saxophone. I mean, you mentioned the multiphonics, but mm-hmm. and the what is the term you just
Oh, that's no.
I know it's your term, but what is it?
It's saxophonistic. You know, people.
You said
people hear someone circular breathing and moving their fingers, and they say, "Oh, you've heard Evan Parker." And I'm like, "No, I played the saxophone." I mean, not that I haven't heard Mr. Parker, but it's just saxophonistic to like.
Right, but
you know, it goes back to like, the Phrygian Marsyas, who was like famous in is it. Greek myth, yeah, I would think it's Greek myth, challenged Apollo to a competition, and he played the aulos, which is like this crazy double reed instrument. It was the music of kind of frenetic Dionysian music, but you don't challenge the gods because he lost. That's
but that's something of the spirit that you're bringing
yeah.
to.
Yeah, and it's just.
Your, right. But I'm sorry, I just wanted to hear what you called your.
Well, I said swirly whirlies.
Thank you. I just wanted to hear it again. Swirly
Other saxophonists.
I know it's
hear,
not a codified
no,
term, but
let's not quote me on that, even though that's. Well, it's
a lot of finger wiggling.
Right. That's what it comes
but,
down to.
But I just wanted to talk a little more about the techniques, though. So I mean,
and that's circular breathing and doing this thing with your hands. And obviously, I believe it or not, I am using my ears, and I have some ideas. But mostly, I'm letting my ears. It's like following a line rather than projecting one so much. Yeah, and I would love to do it for you and make some other sounds. I'm gonna, you know, I do some high squeals and some very soft sounds and some quite resonant loud sounds, and I'm ready whenever you are to start doing that.
All right, well, without further ado, well, I mean, I will change the lights a little bit. Yeah. I'll just take a reset here. But
everyone get a glass of wine. He's going to change the lights, and then I'm going to play a little music.
All right, well, thank you, John. Thank you, man.
That was great.
And that was my conversation with saxophonist John Engel on Thursday, March 10th. The evening continued with a live set of compositions and improvisations for solo saxophone. Let's listen now to John Engel performing live at the Old Stone House in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Yum.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Musical Ecologies Radio Hour. For more information, visit our website at musicalecologies.net.